This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In the mid-19th century, the writer and naturalist Henry David Thoreau was living in Concord, writing about the region's fragile wilderness. He wrote, "The bear, wolf, wildcat, deer, and marten have all disappeared."
It's surprising that this great explorer of the natural world, and New England in particular, lived at a time when the region's forests and animals were at their lowest point in history, decimated by farming, logging, and hunting.
But if Thoreau were to return to New England today, he'd find an astonishingly different natural world. The forests are back and now cover 80% of the region. Previously rare animals roam and prowl through the woods and backyards, and much of the landscape resembles that of 400 years ago, before European settlers arrived here.
As the Boston Globe recently reported, New England is now the most heavily forested region in the country, a recovery that Thoreau once thought impossible. That's the good news. And according to our next guest, there's a great story behind that recovery.
But he says the region's forests now face new threats, including housing construction and urban sprawl. David Foster is director of the Harvard Forest, Harvard University's 3,500-acre research center in Petersham, Mass. He's with us from the studios of New England Public Radio in Amherst. And David Foster, welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Thanks very much.
It's a really interesting story and sort of counterintuitive. We started talking about Thoreau, about how his life coincided with a time when the forests of New England were greatly diminished by humans. So that was the mid-1800s. Can we just start with you sort of painting a picture of what the landscape looked like back then?
Yeah, well, Henry Thoreau really despaired that forests would disappear entirely from Massachusetts and much of New England. The landscape then was largely agrarian. It was a farm landscape of pastures and tilled fields in scattered woodlots, in which farmers and residents derived all their fuel wood to heat their houses.
Mm. You know, it reminds me, there's a part of New England that I'm very familiar with. I spent a lot of time wandering around wandering on Mount Monadnock in southern New Hampshire, which is now very heavily forested, almost all the way to the summit. But as you walk through the woods, you see the remnants of old pasture walls crisscrossing through the woods, and paintings from long ago show these cleared fields making room for sheep. So did that explain what you just described, that you know, these landscapes essentially were cleared away for grazing and such?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And Thoreau lived to see the beginning of the recovery of the forest, because he saw areas in which farmers walked away from their land or farmed less intensively. And in New England, if you don't actively work hard to keep forest from a spot, the woods come back. Trees invade very rapidly.
Hmm. So when did that shift really start happening, this comeback of forest? So if Thoreau saw it sometime in the 19th century, it begins to happen.
Yeah, the middle part of the 19th century. I mean, he coined the word succession, which is a description of forests invading a site and then changing over time.
Hmm. And say more about the comeback. I mean, is it simply a question of people were farming less, coming into towns? What happened?
Yeah, that's exactly right. America was growing. The United States had opened up the Midwest and eventually acquired the Western landscape. Agriculture shifted to more productive lands in the Midwest, with railroads and canals to bring those products to the East, and with a growing interest in industrialization. The population in New England grew, but at the same time, people relocated into mill towns and cities. Mm. And as they did so, the farms were abandoned, the number of farmers decreased, and trees and forests took over the old farm fields.
So was the increase in forests intentional? I mean, in other words, dating back to Thoreau's day, I mean, this area has been known as a sort of concentration of environmentalists, a lot of awareness of these issues. Did that contribute to this, or was this purely circumstantial?
You know, conservation and human decision-making had very little to do with it. That is human planning. The decision-making to move elsewhere was what triggered it. But the forest came back completely by happenstance, without any planning, any forethought, and without any active attempts by the residents to plant forests, plant trees, and increase the cover.
Mm. And not just forests, right? I mean, animals have come back as well, right?
Yeah, there was with the changing landscape, there was a massive change in habitat, and so an opportunity for many species which had been extirpated or driven to very low numbers to come back. And, of course, there was a conservation ethic, and there were regulations and laws that were put into place to control hunting and trapping. But largely it was the change in the landscape which enabled these animals to come back and at the same time led to a decline in many of the birds and small mammals and insects that thrived in Thoreau's day.
Hmm. So it almost seems a little paradoxical because I've always thought of, I mean, as sort of beautiful as New England is, it's one of the more densely populated parts of the country. But here we are in the region that is the most forested. It seems almost contradictory.
Yeah, that's correct. Your statement is right. There is about 80%, a little more than 80% forest cover in New England, and even in the heavily urbanized states in southern New England, there's 50 to 60% or more forest cover.
Hmm. Well, listeners, we want to hear from you on this. We're talking with David Foster. He's director of the Harvard Forest, Harvard University's 3,500-acre research center in Petersham, Massachusetts. And we're talking about this remarkable resurgence of New England's forests. And we're also going to talk about what might be threatening them or turning that remarkable comeback around. Do you see and feel the growth of forests in New England? Are you encountering more animals in your backyard? Are you surprised by how forested this region is? What kind of problems does living with so much more wilderness cause? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston as well. David Foster, so let me just jump right into that question, because it seems like we can be sort of satisfied with this idea of like, gee, we thought in the days of big concerns about global warming and pollution and so on and so forth, we've got these remarkable forests that have come back. Are they here to stay?
Well, it's a great opportunity to actually complete the story that was started by the Boston Globe, which ended with the forest coming back. But it actually turns out for the last 10 to 20 years, depending on where you are in New England, the forests have been disappearing again.
Hmm.
And so now in every state in New England, there is a declining trend in forest cover due to development and the conversion of previously forested areas to housing and commercial spaces, highways, asphalt, and other covers.
Wow. So where are we? I mean, I think we heard that that statistic, 80%. When did it peak? I mean, did it peak in the last 5 years, the last 10 years, or?
Well, the statistics aren't perfect, but it peaked within the last 10 to 20 years. The way that I like to think about it is that really quite inadvertently, history has provided New England with a second chance to determine the fate of its forests.
Hmm.
And the reason that this topic is important now is because people take our forests for granted and don't recognize that they're starting to dwindle and decline all around us.
Yeah. So what does that mean? I mean, obviously that raises public policy questions and issues and prescriptions. What's your view on that?
Well, what it means is New England actually has the greatest capacity for conservation perhaps in the world, certainly in the United States. There are more conservation organizations, strongly dedicated state and federal agencies that are trying to conserve the landscape. There really is an opportunity to conserve the forest that's come back. It does depend on policy. It also depends very strongly on individual private landowners making the decision to conserve their forests.
Hmm. Now, it's interesting because we started this conversation talking about forests coming back from agrarian use and agrarian development. But it sounds like the risks that you're describing might pose might be a little more difficult to recover from than agricultural development.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, the way I like to describe it is that the deforestation for farming is kind of a soft deforestation. It leaves areas like fields, which can rapidly reforest if they're left alone. Mm-hmm. Whereas what we're doing now is we're converting forests to hard areas, to hard surfaces. So this is a hard deforestation in which asphalt and buildings and the presence of lots of people will make it very, very difficult to return and recover.
Hmm. Listeners, we're talking to David Foster. He's director of the Harvard Forest, and we're talking to him about New England's mighty forests, the sort of remarkable resurgence of these forests, but also about the risks they face. We'd like to hear from you, what you see outside your window, whether it's a urban, suburban, or rural window. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And David, let's take a couple of calls. Adam is calling from Worcester. Hi, Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Good to have you. What's on your mind?
Well, obviously, urban landscapes cut into the forest a lot, but I was also curious about the effects of some invasive species. For instance, in my yard, and I notice in a lot of highways in my area that there seems to be a lot of bittersweet, I think it's called. It's an invasive vine species that can climb trees and, you know, absorb some of the resources they need to live, and it seems to, you know, affect their health. And I was wondering how concerning some species are like that.
David Foster, how much of a threat are species like bittersweet vine to the region's forests?
Yeah, well, there are a number of things that are looming out there. We talked about deforestation, invasive species. You have plant species which are non-native that can spread into forests. And then, of course, we have insects and pathogens that are affecting our forests, many of which are brought in from other places. In general, these invasive species, especially these invasive plant species, are most prolific in places where there's lots of human activity. So they go part and parcel with deforestation and direct human impacts on the forest. So oftentimes they're very strongly linked.
Hmm. Let's go to Erica, who's calling from Wayland. Hi, Erica. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's on your mind?
I live in Wayland, which is about 30 minutes outside of Boston in the Metro West, and we have tons and tons of conservation land, and I'm a runner, and I run every morning. And I really think that I've seen more animals in the last, I would say, 5 years than I've ever seen before. Hmm. I see coyotes all the time. I see deer. I see bunnies, foxes. I see probably bunnies the most often, but I see so much wildlife around me, and it's really a neat thing.
Well, David, respond if you would, Erica, and sort of the question that I would add to that. You know, we read that quote from Thoreau talking about sort of bemoaning the disappearance of the bear, the wolf, the wildcat, the deer, the marten. There's Erica talking about a lot of these animals coming back, but are we seeing the variety of animals that were once out there, or are we just seeing a resurgence of particular species?
You know, the amount of change is absolutely phenomenal. The number of species that have recovered, the number of individual animals that have increased in New England is really staggering. There are some species which are still missing, of course. Mm-hmm. We don't have wolf populations. We don't have a cougar population. We do have, you know, things like moose and bear and the animals that Erica mentioned. And so it's a remarkable recovery. It's not complete, but it would absolutely stagger Henry Thoreau if he could see it today.
Mm. David, I'd like to ask you about the biology of forests. I know I feel this way. My guess is most people listening to the radio feel this way. We're happy they're there. We want to preserve them. But what's their purpose? What do they actually do for this region environmentally?
Yeah, well, I think the benefits of forests are really tremendous, and we really do take them for granted. I mean, biologically, the processes that they're involved in, they clean the water that falls as precipitation onto our land and ends up in our streams and our ponds and our reservoirs. You know, 40% of Massachusetts derives its drinking water from the Quabbin Reservoir, which provides clean, unfiltered water in a remarkable way to metropolitan Boston because it is a conserved, forested watershed. The other thing that forests do, of course, is they grow, and as they grow, they're taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and storing it as wood and as material in the forest. That actually has a measurable impact on the rate of CO2 in our atmosphere, helping to abate the rate of climate change.
Mm. Let's go to John, who's calling from Melrose. Hi, John. You're on the air with David Foster talking about the region's forests.
Yeah, this is a very interesting topic. Thanks to David Foster for raising this. And you have a book on it, I guess, is that it? Do you have a book on the subject right now, David?
Well, thanks for giving me the opportunity to mention one thing we haven't talked about, which is not a book that I've written, but an effort to really advance this conservation. And it's called The Wildlands and Woodlands Vision, written by a group of scientists across New England. It started in Massachusetts. And it actually identifies an opportunity to conserve most of the forest that we have today over the next 50 years.
Hmm. Thank you. Listen, my point, I grew up in rural Ireland, and we're attempting to reforest Ireland, government grants, etc. But here in Melrose, I notice that McMansions are being built. There's a place called Mount Hood here where there's a golf course and some public land, a big piece of public mountain. And recently, within the last 5 years, there was a new road built in there. There used to be a service road, and you get these McMansions. And now if you walk a trail out onto that road, they look at me as I'm an invasive species where I think they are the invasive species. You know what I mean? Mm. These people, how do they get permission? I mean, you have so many ordinances here, micro-ordinances about how to put your trash out and everything, and they can cut down forests and they can stick big houses where nature belongs.
John, we hear and feel your pain. David, what do you say to John? I mean, it's an interesting question that he raises.
Well, Henry Thoreau would have felt exactly as you do. In fact, he wrote about that kind of feeling when he walked by farmhouses. But you know, the way that we're going to succeed in conserving these forests is by altering the way that we live in the landscape and where we choose to build our houses. And what we see moving forward, and the whole point of this Wildlands and Woodlands effort, is that we can still have economic growth, we can still develop plenty of housing, but if we do it in a more compact and strategic way, we can do that at the same time that we leave these forests alone and that we leave the kind of conservation opportunities and recreational opportunities that you and Erica were talking about for people to enjoy into the future.
Mm. I want to ask you about this idea of rewilding that we were reading about earlier today. Is this a plausible strategy for healing the environment, for helping the forests continue to come back? I mean, is it possible to rewild, to reverse environmental degradation?
Well, that's what we're talking about.
That
here.
Is what you're talking about. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I think it's important to point out that our vision shouldn't be to just leave these forests alone.
Mm-hmm.
These forests do an awful lot of good for us. They do a lot of good for nature, but they do represent a resource. And so there's every reason that we should kind of combine two strategies. One is to conserve the forest and to leave a certain segment of it alone so it can be completely natural. And then the other is to actively manage the forest so we do get resources from it while we maintain a forest cover. And you can do both of those simultaneously while still providing all the benefits that we've talked about.
Let's go to Kaplan, who's calling from Brookline. Hi, Kaplan. You're on the air.
Actually, it's my last name. It's Seth Kaplan.
Oh, hi there. Hi, Seth. How you doing?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so I'm coming back from the New England Governor's Eastern Canadian Premier's meeting up in heavily forested Quebec. And I just wanted to give you a chance to draw out your guests a little bit about two climate-related things, because the meeting was very much the governors and the premiers talking about climate. There was a discussion of climate impacts on forests. The first thing was the role of the forest as an indicator that we are concentrating our development in the cities, which is also good from a climate perspective because people are traveling or driving less. And then the second thing is I wanted to directly to get to his expertise on the role of the direct impact of the changing climate on the forest, and a little give him a chance to talk a little bit about the disruption that is very likely to occur as the species change, as the current tree species die, new ones come in that have generally been further to the south.
All right, Steph, great. Two big issues. David Foster, we have about a minute left, but please tackle Steph's question.
So there. Very very quickly on the first one, the way that we're going to conserve our forests is altering the way that we live in the landscape. That is going to be much more sustainable and much more energy efficient because we can move across the landscape much better doing that. So there's every reason to argue for that. On the second, we are in the middle of a changing climate that is going to alter our forests, that is going to disrupt some forest process. The more that we fragment, the more that we convert, the more that we disrupt our forest, the more susceptible it's going to be to this climate change. So I would say that conservation is still the key as we move forward into a changing environment.
Hmm. David, one final question. What do you think our forests will look like 50 years from now? And you can answer that in one of two ways, what you think they'll look like, what you hope they'll look like.
Yeah, well, we have a project now that we call the Future Scenarios Project, and we actually are doing that. We're looking out 50 to 100 years. We're envisioning a number of different directions that we can go depending on the kinds of choices that we as a society makes. And so I'd say that the way that I see our forests in 50 years is really aligned with this wildlands and woodlands vision. It's intact, it's old, and it's wonderful.
All right, David Foster, that's a nice idea that you leave us with. Thanks so much for the work you do. Thanks for coming on to the program. We're very grateful.
Wonderful to be here.
That's David Foster, director of the Harvard Forest, Harvard University's 3,500-acre research center in Petersham, Massachusetts. Stay with us. Coming up, who knew there was so much money in candles? We look at the billion-dollar sale of the local company Yankee Candle. I'm Anthony Brooks with Deb Becker. This is Radio Boston.